Washington.
Good evening and welcome to the Ruckus Caucus, live now. Live at Ben's Next Door. Next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, 12th and June. Mark, Terry, and Garland, three minds linked and locked in analysis, wit, and sagacity. Every Tuesday night, live. Live right here, 7 p.m. WPFW 89.3 FM. Welcome again. Live with Terry, Mark, and Garland, and the Ruckus Caucus. Good evening, America. Welcome to the Ruckus Caucus. I am Mark Levine. Sitting to my left is...
Garland Nixon.
And to my right is...
I am not to the right, but my name is Terry D. Kester.
And we are collectively the Ruckus Caucus.
Terry is to your other left.
That's right.
One guy's to the left, the other's to the other
Terry's
left.
Terry's far to my left.
Far to the left.
If you walk around in a circle to the left, eventually you'll get back to Terry.
Eventually you get back to common sense.
We are here live at Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street Northwest, next door to Ben's Chili Bowl. You are welcome to join us. You're welcome to participate in the conversation.
We have a microphone right here.
We have a very important conversation tonight. Because tonight, President Obama, welcome. Welcome. Have a seat. Have a seat, Mr. President. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. You may ask why we called you here, why you came to Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street, and why we're sitting here with what looks like grim faces. It's not because we dislike you, Mr. President. All of us supported you. All of us want you still to succeed. But we feel, Mr. President, you need an intervention. You see...
Desperately.
We progressives, we liberals, we Americans, not just those on the left...
The middle class, the
fell
poor.
In love with a certain Senator Obama in 2008... I myself endorsed you at the time of the Iowa caucuses. It was a tough choice between you and Hillary Clinton. And I know that Garland and Terry both supported you, too.
And paved and worked. I mean paved, but worked the street.
Worked very hard to see you get elected.
For you, yes.
And yet, we've seen you go astray. We've seen you, frankly, take your love of bipartisanship, your wish for America to come together, that very inspiring speech you gave in 2004, the one talking about Little League in the blue states and gay families in the red states. We know you want to unite America, but we fear that your addiction to this idea of United America may have blinded you to the essence of the other political party.
You are apparently indulging in consensus.
The Republican Party... of today, these are the leaders of the Republicans, not ordinary Republicans, but the leaders of the Republican Party have said that their goal is to make you a one-term president. And in order to achieve that goal, they have changed their views on all their other goals. We know, Mr. President, that you believe that people in Washington are there because they believe in various policies they want to see enacted. And we are sorry to tell you that's not true. Republicans used to support cap and trade. They used to support a path to citizenship. They used to support a health care option with a health care mandate. They used to support tax cuts. But in your stimulus package, the largest tax cuts in American history, Republicans even voted against tax cuts. That should have been a signal to you, Mr. President.
Are we going to get the tough love?
That people.
But the good news is, but the good news here, Mark, is that if the president starts supporting those things again, then the Republicans will stop.
It's an addiction, Mr. President. We want you to be your best self.
It's more than an addiction.
We want you to understand. We want you to understand that this is done out of love. It's tough love. You need to break your addiction and open up your eyes. You know, the people in the cults want to believe their leader's looking out for them. The people on drugs want to believe their drug dealer's looking out for them. And we know you want to believe the Republicans in Congress actually want to help America rather than destroy the economy just to see you not being elected.
What this comes down to,
sincerely,
Mr. President,
I'm just finishing my intervention letter.
Mr.
With love
President,
and affection, sincerely yours. Mark Levine.
Mr.
Go ahead,
President,
Terry.
You are in denial.
He's in denial.
And there is nothing more tragic than an individual in denial, be it in terms of their relationships or in terms of alcohol or drugs or whatever. You seem to be in denial, and you are floundering, and you are taking down. And you remember that all addiction and all denial becomes a family disease, and the disease is spreading in America.
It's hurting us all.
It's hurting us all. Because, unfortunately, you have not faced your denial. It is time that you take a good hard look. We're here to help you. We're here to go with you all the way. But you have to get to work. You have to accept the fact that you have turned over the power to the Republicans and that you are powerless over the Republicans.
Yes. And let's not forget that when we heard a lot of speeches from our president, from then candidate Obama. And a lot of them were change or about change, but a lot of them were kind of amorphous. So what happened? To some extent, we saw a blank slate that said change, a blank easel. We projected a picture upon that easel as to what we thought change was. And unfortunately, what has happened, because here's one thing I see, even in our discussion now. So many discussions that we have about our president are based on a foundational concept that says he's a progressive, but he's not acting progressive. He's not acting on behalf of progressive values. That's the foundation, right? Let's not forget, I say this week after week, you are what your record says you are. So what I would say to the president is this. There are things you have done that have been progressive.
He has a whole history as a community activist, Southside Chicago.
No, I'm talking about since he's been president.
All right.
But there are things that you have done that the deals that you have struck that have been nowhere near progressive. So what happens is if you consider yourself a progressive or even having progressive values, what you're doing now is right of center. So if we simply say you are what your record says you are, that means that you're a president that's right of center. And really, that's not where our country needs to go. And in fact, that's not what everybody voted for.
I don't think it's where Obama wants to go. That's why I'm calling this an intervention. See, the alcoholic or the drug addicted person or the person who's in a cult doesn't want the idea is if they open up their eyes, they really wouldn't want to go where they're going.
The idea is
that President Obama has a long history as a community activist on the South Side of Chicago, that his speeches did talk about progressive values. I can't tell you, I don't know many progressives that don't say, wow, remember that guy? See, hear that guy in 2008? Why didn't we elect him as president of the United States? I'm not saying that Obama doesn't believe in his progressive values. I'm saying he believes them, but he's gone on the wrong path, and therefore he's not standing up for them, when really there's some simple ways and policies and strategies that we can give him to fight the Republicans, and I want to give some of them to him tonight.
Well, he's got to begin to get out of denial, and that's the first thing. The first step is admitting
you have a problem.
Admitting you have a problem. That's the first step, Mr. President. You've got to admit you've got a serious problem yourself as a leader, as President of the United States. It ain't working. It simply isn't working, and you're not doing what you said you were going to do. You are stuck. The second step is obviously you've got to realize that you are powerless over whatever this is that is causing you to go down this terrible path, and you are powerless over the Republican Party.
Without our help, and without your own standing up for yourself. But without your standing up for yourself.
We're all going to be powerless over the Republican Party.
But it's like an addiction. I mean, the family has to want the person to change, but
exactly
the person has to want to change.
But you know, Terry.
You know, one other thing I just want to throw in. You know, when you're in this state, Mr. President, and this is a state that we're trying to find a way to reach you. We've tried every single way we possibly can think of. We're trying a new way to reach you. The point is, when you reach a state that you are now in of denial and delusion and addiction, if you want to use that word, what you really begin to do, and I hate to use the word, but it's a fact, you begin to betray those who care most about you. And you are betraying your base.
He's betraying himself.
Now, the other question is this. Is he really powerless over the Republican Party? I don't think he is. He's not exercising power. But here's the other thing. If you have a problem, if you have an addiction, let's say it's alcohol, and you hang around a bunch of guys that drink all the time, mm-hmm. you're going to drink. I say that to say this. I personally feel that the people surrounding the president, that his confidants, that a lot of them are pure legislators. Pure legislator. A pure legislator only thinks one thing and one thing only. What can I get through?
Right.
That's all. Now, ultimately, that is legislation. What can I get through? But at some point before that, you have to kind of run up to when you have the, when you're in charge of pushing what you want through. Not what can I get through, but this is what I want to get through and fight to get it through. I think so. What I'm saying is I think to some extent, we have a, has a president who said, you know, I want to keep my BlackBerry because I don't want to get in a bubble. Now you talk about a guy, and
he's
you
know,
if the president would ever acknowledge this, he is in the bubble of all bubbles. When you look at the polls, and the polls say that overwhelmingly on both sides of the aisle, Americans want wealth, the wealthy to pay their fair share.
Americans, they want Medicare.
Americans want Medicare strengthened, if anything. Americans don't want the military budget to be addressed with cuts. Overwhelmingly, the Americans want this.
That's right.
And you are talking about going against what 65-70% of the Americans want, and you don't think you're in a bubble?
Overwhelmingly, Americans support creating jobs more than they support cutting the deficit.
Yes.
The only people who want to cut the deficit are the Republican Party, the same party that said, Vice President Cheney said, in fact, a few years
deficits
back,
don't
deficits
matter.
Don't matter. The same party that ran up more debt under George W. Bush than all former presidents put together. But now that you're in power, now they want to cut the deficit.
They don't want to cut the deficit.
Wake up, Mr. President. The front page of today's Washington Post says that you're waging a charm offensive, that you're going out to big donors across the country trying to remind them of progressive values, and they're disappointed in you. They're not giving. Why aren't they giving? They're not giving because they feel that you're not acting on their behalf.
Wait. Is that,
because
a fact?
Ultimately,
is that a fact? I understand they are giving.
Some are, some aren't. He's having trouble with some of them.
Yeah, he's still on his goal to make $1 billion, right?
Well, now they're saying they want to get less than that because that's a number that sounds
they're
bad.
Not going to make.
Also, on page A14 of today's Washington Post, we have a Republican, this Tom Tolles cartoon, saying we can't talk about tax hikes. We have a spending problem, not a taxing problem. It shows Obama saying it's not negotiating if you take everything off the table, and Republicans saying we don't have a negotiation problem, we have a capitulation problem. Mr. President, we do have a capitulation problem. We talked about this last week.
And it's you who's capitulating.
If you want 100 and the Republicans want 0 and you start the negotiations at 50, you'll be lucky to get 25. We need you to start at 100, and then, yes, if you need to compromise at 70 or 80, Terry won't be happy. Garland and I will probably accept that, but none of us are happy with 25.
It can't work. It won't work. I want to check one thing you said. You said the American public was against cutting in defense spending?
No, in favor.
All right. I just want to make sure, because, I mean, I'm doing a show tomorrow
misspoke,
morning on what's at stake about that.
Yeah, I may have misspoke. Yeah. They are in favor of... of cutting the,
overwhelmingly.
I mean, when we're in the midst of an intervention, the last thing we want to do is mislead the person
we're trying to.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry, Mr. President. Please don't leave. Stay. Yeah. Seat. Yeah. We're doing this for your own good.
Yeah.
And you know what? You can even keep smoking. I hate tobacco personally, but
is
we'd rather.
Is he still smoking?
I think he is. They say he's still on the. I put this up as a cause on Facebook and I actually chose a picture of him smoking a cigarette.
Oh.
To defame him, but I think he is still smoking, but to recognize that what he's doing with Republicans, for the country at least, is a far more dangerous addiction. And that's my point there.
And I think, you know, I'm getting a little nervous here because I don't feel quite, this is a serious moment, but I don't quite feel the raucous caucus joie de vie here. You know, so the point of all this is, and we brought it up last week is where we first brought it up, and the point is, you know, we honestly don't know what it's going to take for this president to change his path, you know. And we're willing to try just about anything at this point, because if he doesn't change his path, not only is he not going to get reelected, but he is going to damn the country, literally, to Republican footprints, to Republican proposals that are just going to keep on marching towards rewarding the wealthy while they're cutting the whole foundation, all of the safety nets out from the middle class and the poor.
Well, this is the point that Garland's making. It's not just the progressives, but the middle.
Right.
The middle supports strengthening Medicare. The middle supports jobs over deficits. The middle supports cutting the military deficit. We're not asking you to move left. We're asking you to do what you said you were going to do and that the vast majority of America supports.
And we're not asking you to even to go left, right. We're not asking you to do anything unconventional.
Do
Here's
what
we're
you
saying.
Said you would do.
Here's what we're saying. This is real easy for a politician. Look at the polls and drift in the direction of the... Hey, how hard is that, Mark? Read the polls if you're a politician. I know.
Bill Clinton knew how to do that.
I'll read the polls. What do the polls say? 60%, 76. Hey, this is the direction I'm going.
There's all kinds of examples.
Hey, Mark, I can do that.
You know, there's all kinds of examples that support what should be done. Interestingly enough, Sweden, a relatively small country, but in a much better financial shape than we were before the collapse.
Great article a few days ago in the Washington Post.
A great article. What Sweden did when the collapse happened, because they were hurt, their banks were hurt, the same as everybody else, they actually shored up their safety net.
Right.
They put money directly into the safety net so that people wouldn't be stranded without jobs. They subsidized some jobs. They wouldn't be stranded without health care, et cetera, et cetera. So the economy kept on churning, because they were supporting the weakest people, the people that would be damaged the most. And they are in a much stronger position of recovery than we are and than most other countries are. It's a perfect example of what you could do if you took the right steps.
You know, it's interesting. There's no country, if you ask a country for the right wing that they want to demonize, a Western country, the most socialist country in the West, what are they going to pick? They're going to pick Sweden. That's one of the stereotypical socialist country. And yet the article in the Washington Post a few days ago showed they have the strongest economy of any Western industrialized nation.
With the exception maybe of Germany.
Because when middle-class people and poor people have money to spend, the economy doesn't go into the toilet like it does when you take all the money from middle-class and poor people the way we've done in America and funnel it to the rich.
And see, what the president, I think, needs to grasp here, and, you know, the reality is when we have this talk, you know, I almost feel like saying, you know, he's a very smart guy.
He
knows what the heck we're saying. So then I got to ask myself, why are you doing it? You know exactly what I'm saying.
I think he may be a little naive. I think he really believes that the Republicans that are in Washington, Garland, actually want to implement policies.
Well, I think he believes that his job is to find the middle, but the Republicans know the old game. You just move further to the right, and the middle keeps moving to the right.
I don't think that's even it. I think what has happened to Obama, and this definitely requires some intervention, is President Obama came in with some high hopes. He wasn't going to be quite the philosopher, the visionary that we had hoped for, but he came in with high hopes and hoped to get a certain number of things accomplished. He did not get any of them really accomplished.
I disagree, Terry. He did get a few things accomplished.
Yeah, right, but none of them are going to...
Not enough.
None of them are funded enough to do anything or anything else, you know, and they're all going to be repealed or changed or defunded, so they're not going to work.
That's speculation here. Let's go with what we got.
No, it's already happening.
Let's go with what we have.
Make your point, and then I'm going to disagree with you.
The point is, he now... I believe still has somewhat of a belief of what he wants to do, and he's now caught in strictly an addictive thought process of saying that he has to get reelected to do the things he wanted to do because he didn't get them done before, and he will compromise anything to get reelected so that he thinks he can recover. But it doesn't work that way when you're trapped in your own delusion.
Here's a problem I have with it, with the whole thing. Whoever controls the conversation, whoever controls the premise, controls it all.
That was our topic last week. Who stole the bully pulpit?
So when the Republicans say we have to cut, and you start saying, okay, let's see where we're going to cut, instead of saying, wait a minute, whoa, time out.
It's just like saying, have one more drink.
A, this is not the time to cut jobs, and B, we need to take action to create jobs. Now you have a different argument. Now you're not meeting them as to what we have to cut.
Right, you're
meeting them as to they're saying we got to cut. You're saying we got to create jobs.
Right.
At least if you meet, you're meeting somewhere between cutting and creating jobs. The only question is how much do you cut? And let me add this: it's clear right now they're cutting federal spending, which means federal employees are being laid off.
And Speaker Boehner says
thousands.
That's okay. If hundreds of thousands of people are laid off,
what are you
doing? Speaker Boehner says he's fine with
that. Clearly, the American people say, number one, we want jobs. Now, what you're doing is working with the Republicans to cut jobs. They say we want jobs, and you're working to basically saying to the Republicans, how many jobs are we going to cut? You say cut 100,000 jobs. I say cut 79,900.
And that's exactly the point. The polls show the American people care more about the economy than they care about the deficit. In some abstract way, they say they care about the deficit, but if you rank it in terms of their importance, jobs are up there. Health care is up there.
Let me give you an idea.
The deficit is way, way down. Hang on, Terry, because I want to respond to something else you said, because before you go on to something else. You said that President Obama hadn't accomplished much of anything. I disagree. I actually think he accomplished some things in his first years. And when you're dealing with someone who's got an addiction, you don't want to tell them they're worthless. You don't want to tell them they've done nothing. You want to let them know the good things they have done and why we love them. And we still, speaking for myself, we still love Obama. So let's talk about what he did, all right? He did do a stimulus package. It wasn't large enough, but he did get one done.
And it was wrongly directed.
He did do health care reform. It wasn't enough.
He stopped the economy from going over the cliff.
He stopped the economy from going over the cliff.
Auto industry.
He did financial reform.
He saved the auto industry.
He saved the auto industry.
Don't you dare.
All of these things were steps in the right direction. They didn't go far enough.
There has been no financial reform.
But that's subjective, Terry. That's subjective, okay? You know, you feel that there hasn't.
Let me give you the perfect example. You've got the Dodd-Frank Act, right?
Suppose the Dodd-Frank bill is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
It's nonsense. Let me give you a perfect example, and you may not even know this because it just came out quite recently. In it, they're saying that you can, you know, if you're going to have a hedge fund and you're going to have basically over 15 members in your hedge fund, you're going to have to be registered with the SEC. That's basically what they're going to. But they made exceptions. Of course they made exceptions. What is the exception? Families. That sounds good, but then they had to define families. So what it now means, they're defining a family as 10 generations. This is the regulations that are coming out of the Frank Dodd bill.
Now wait,
10 generations, meaning therefore your family can include hundreds of people not registered with the SEC, once again having no regulation, supervision, and no transparency.
Hang on, Terry. Are you saying that's in the statute? Or are you saying it's part of the regulations?
That's in the regulations.
Well, regulations aren't in the statute. Regulations come from the SEC.
They come.
What that means is that the president can change
those
regulations.
This is what the committee or whatever, the commission that was set up to create the regulations for the SEC or within the SEC, this is their...
But now, Terry,
and let me give you
one
more example.
You're making our point.
Hold on.
Because the statute does a good thing. Now, what you're saying is, and this is true, that even though the law did a good thing, behind closed doors, a commission has been set up, paid for by Wall Street, where they're influencing them to make exceptions to what would otherwise be a very good bill. This is what Elizabeth Warren is complaining about. What was done in the light of day, what was done in the light of day, is now behind closed doors. Now they're sapping energy. That's why we need an intervention. That's my point. The president can still change the course of
it. You're missing a big point, because part of the same thing is that you're exactly right. It's almost as if the president is saying, okay, I'm giving up booze, I'm going to hard liquor. Sure, you've put up a piece of legislation that might do something.
That's the hard stuff.
But no.
Gotten off cocaine. Now we just have to get him off marijuana.
We're getting way off track.
You're ignoring
one of the
problem.
Reasons that we're getting way off track is because we got to differentiate between Congress and the president.
That's true.
Okay.
But if you pass a law and sign a law and it has no effect.
Let me finish here.
Go ahead. Finish.
He can't sign a bill that doesn't exist. So let's not try to pretend like he wrote the bill and he wrote everything bad in it and he negotiated it with the Republicans and he then signed the bill that he wrote. The bottom line is he had to sign what was in front of
him. Or veto it.
So. I'm glad he signed it. Mark is glad he signed it. You wanted it
because it's powerless.
That's fine.
It's not powerless.
Well, Terry, you can feel it's powerless.
Wall Street wouldn't have been so opposed to it.
But that's still not the issue. As we drift and digress,
it is the issue.
We get back to it. So the question that I would throw to the president and look at the president and say this: who are you listening to? That's the question. Because right now people say this is what America says. America wants jobs. The Republicans, they get elected, God knows why. They say, it's all about jobs. They come in and we say, what are you going to do about jobs? We're going to cut. We don't care how many jobs. We look at the president. Hey, it's all about jobs. What are you doing? I'm over here cutting. I can't talk about jobs right now. I'm with the Republicans cutting money. The Republicans in Congress isn't listening to us. Right.
What the Washington Post said today.
The president.
The Republicans want $1.7 trillion and the White House offered $1.3 trillion.
So if the Republicans.
Why is he offering anything at all?
If Congress isn't listening to what we want, both sides of the aisle out here walking around struggling, if the Republicans aren't, if the powers that be, the Supreme Court isn't, president, Who are you listening to? Who is instructing you? This is my question, Barack Obama, as I look you in the face. Who is instructing you to work on issues that we are not interested in?
You're making him chain smoke.
Yeah, who's telling you this?
Put the cigarette down.
Mark doesn't want it. The polls say nobody wants it. Who's doing it?
People he surrounded himself with. You know, he's surrounded with drunks.
Well, he's surrounded with Rubin as a financial advisor.
Geithner.
But ultimately, he's responsible.
The buck stops.
General Motors. I mean, et cetera. He's brought in all these people who are addicted the same way he is addicted.
And ultimately, he's responsible.
The buck stops with the President of the United States. And it seems to me that part of this is President Obama actually acting out of his better self. He wants to believe, as Rodney King said, that we can all get along. He's the guy in 2004 that talked about the red states and blue states coming together.
Yeah, I think he believes this.
I don't think this is just... This is a man who is looking to find some kind of compromise.
And what he doesn't understand, accomplish what he said he was going to do. It's like making a promise, I'm not going to drink anymore, or I'm going to drink less anymore, but I'm doing the same thing.
Here's what the president doesn't understand. When he came into office, there were 24 Republicans that supported cap and trade. When he came into office, there were 24 Republicans that supported immigration reform. When he came into office, there were all the Republicans supported tax cuts to stimulate the economy. And what did he propose? Cap and trade, healthcare reform, immigration reform, tax cuts to stimulate the economy. And every single Republican said, oops, I don't believe that anymore. Now, why did they say that? Did they suddenly all change their policy views? Or should we listen to what their leaders say? Well, Mitch McConnell, the leader of Republicans in the Senate, when asked what his single most important goal was, he said, and I quote, "The single most important thing we want to achieve, we Republicans, is for President Obama to be a one-term president," unquote. Other leader, Rush Limbaugh, said, "We want him to fail."
I would say this, Mark. If you think the president doesn't very clearly understand everything that you're saying, then I think you're being naive. This guy is really smart.
Why is he calling them out for flip-flopping on? He's taken very middle-of-the-road positions.
The simple point that you're forgetting, and you're talking about intervention, and we were talking about intervention last week as a philosophy, as an approach. The basis of intervention is honesty, gut-level honesty. You cannot sugarcoat in an intervention.
I don't think we're sugarcoating.
Yeah, Terry, you better stop sugarcoating. You do that every week. You're always sugarcoating the issues here. Yeah.
You're full of sugar. Yeah.
And let me give you a just so you know, I don't know if we've got even time for it. Congress just gave, in the last 3 months, $6.1 billion of bonuses to staff workers. Isn't that nice while they're cutting jobs in the government and everything else? $6.1 million in bonuses. That's the government we're working with.
And you know what? That's far, far less than a single CEO on Wall Street. When we come back, I want to talk about the United States Supreme Court ruling that not only are corporations equal to us, they're far, far superior to us, and we dare not try to compete against them. That's a violation in their mind of free speech.
This is something that should wake up
the President of the United States. Hey, we're here at Ben's. Come join us, 1211 U Street. Your voice can be heard as well. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, this is Elise Bryant. If you can hear my voice, then you know that there's a vast desert out there known as the mainstream media. WPFW is an oasis for your body, mind, and spirit. So won't you take a moment now to become a member of WPFW? Visit us at WPFW.org.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. We are live at Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street. I am Mark Levine here with
Garland Nixon
and
the very calm Terry Kessler.
Oh, I don't know how calm you are, Terry. And we are hosting an intervention for the President of the United States. Mr. President, we're very glad you're here. It's not about your cigarette habit. It's about your habit of over-compromising to Republicans. You may have heard, Mr. President, about the Supreme Court ruling that just came down yesterday. And the Supreme Court said that an Arizona law that had worked for more than a decade, that simply said if a corporation or very rich person starts spending billions of dollars on an issue, that actually people on the other side of the issue would get funding in order to get their voices out. Supreme Court held today, no, it is unfair to let human beings have the same free speech rights that corporations have. So not only have they included corporations under our Constitution, they have cut us out. And yet, Mr. President, I didn't hear you say a word about that Supreme Court.
Speaking of free speech for human beings, we're going to get some intellect injected into this conversation after dealing with you knuckleheads. Yes. But don't forget, you're listening to 89.3 FM WPFW here in Washington, D.C.
Pacifica
Radio. We are here. Well, we are on the air every Tuesday.
And by the way, now with our new website, you know, you can stream very easily to catch the shows anytime.
Oh, yeah, WPFW.org. Email your friends all over the world. They could be in Antarctica.
And you can also join our cause, the Obama Intervention, on Facebook, and we hope you do. We have someone live in our audience that wants to make a comment. Welcome to the show and make
Jump
a comment.
Jump in, Heidi. Set them straight.
In regard to the intervention, I think the intervention is a great idea, but I have to agree with Terry. You need to be harder. It's too much that you want to intervene, but I think Mark and Garland are too soft on Brock still. I think he needs...
He needs tougher love.
And on top of it, when Republicans are in office, they bulldoze their ideas. If Barack Obama had come in when he had the majority and bulldozed his ideas, I think we would have had stronger health care legislation and we would have more of his ideas, progressive ideas in place.
Thank you, Heidi. That's a great comment.
I agree. You've got to be gut level honest if you're going to do an intervention. And the gut level and the perfect example is the public option. It was on the table. It could have been on the table. He could have fought for it.
It was the middle option.
And he was the first one to say, forget about it.
You're right about it.
Which
you're right about
is
that, Terry.
Betrayal.
Well, you know what? Here's the other thing that I got to throw out there. And whenever you're doing an intervention, you always got to ask a question. You can't get someone to stop drinking if they don't think there's a problem with their alcoholism.
Yeah, there is that.
You know what I mean?
Let me ask you both that question. Do you think President Obama realizes there's a problem? I mean, he remembers under President Bush. And in 2007, we had a Democratic House, we had a Democratic Senate, but President Bush still got to set the agenda. Now we have a Democratic Senate and a Republican House.
The question is,
they have one branch of government, and yet all the news, all the energy is focused on the Republicans' goals, which is to cut health care, cut education, cut jobs, to harm the environment, and not on Democratic goals of job creation. No, is that the media's fault? Is that President Obama's fault? Why? Did you think President Obama realizes there's a problem?
Well, let me say this. The question is this. Whether or not he realizes there's a problem, I'm sure he realizes a problem, but what does he see the problem as? For instance, if I got a problem with drinking and you bug me to death, Garland, do you have a problem? Yeah. What is it? Mark keeps asking me to stop drinking. I wish you'd leave me alone.
Well, he's blamed the left.
You get the picture?
He's blamed the professional left.
So it's possible that the president says, I got a problem. What's that? The people on the left keep aggravating me and telling me to stop doing what I'm doing. And what I'm doing is great. That we have to keep in mind that's the possibility. The reality is, the reality are the polls, and that regardless of what we project upon him, he is what his record says he is. And if we ask, what does his record say he is? His record says he's a guy who has put through some progressive stuff, but has leaned center right more often than not, regardless of how he got center right. Now, let's be honest.
I think he started Bill Clinton, in the middle and then compromised to the right.
But ultimately, where'd he end up? Because ultimately what you are, see, he's going on a charm offensive according to that. What you are speaks louder than what you say. That's the problem.
But the charm offensive is behind closed doors.
If you follow this metaphor.
It's not in the Oval Office the way he needs to.
Smiling ain't going to get it, my friend.
Yeah, if you follow this metaphor and you accept the fact that he's in denial, The tragic thing is he cannot, nor can we, blame the Republicans. It is not about the booze. The booze is not the enemy. The booze is not the cause of alcoholism. It's just part of the picture or any other kind of addiction. The problem is within Mr. Obama, and he has to face that. There is something fundamental that is wrong in his leadership, his style, his personality, whatever you want to call it, that is impeding his own progress, you know, as well as the country's progress. And you cannot blame others. He has to accept the responsibility.
I remember when
has to change.
I remember when President Obama, then Senator Obama, ran against Hillary Clinton. And she was talking about things like, oh, the vast right-wing conspiracy. And he was talking about rising above partisanship. And some people said, well, you know, that's a little naive because those of us who worked in Washington the way I did knew that the Republicans could not, would not rise above bipartisanship. Maybe they did in Ronald Reagan's day to some extent when Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill went out for drinks after Congress. They don't do that anymore.
Mark,
this is not
Mark,
your father's Republican Party.
Say, look at the results of the policies of the Reagan administration.
Well, there you go.
Didn't work out so well. Well,
he didn't compromise much.
They didn't
either.
Rise above much. Yeah, that's right. Reagan got what he wanted.
But they've gotten worse today. That Reagan would be a liberal. And here's what I think the president could do, because I think if Mr. President,
okay,
you've come all the way to Ben's next door.
Cut that last line, please. Erase that last line.
You're sitting here. You're listening to us. We forced you to be here. Let me give you real strategies that you can use to beat the Republicans at their own game. Because he might say, well, there's nothing I can do. The Republicans, they control, you know, the media, they control the narrative. Here's an idea that I think is a really good one for you. You can beat them on the debt ceiling. I'm going to throw it out first time tonight. I'll tell you this. I have talked to some people who worked for the president about this idea. They loved it. Whether it got to the president, I don't know. But listen up, Mr. President. Here's how you get away from the debt ceiling. We are already in default. We were in default last May.
Yep.
Timothy Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, is moving stuff around to last us to August 2nd.
Yep.
But we have been technically in default since May. Here's what you do, Mr. President. We are in default. Congress has said we're going to tax you so much. Congress has said you should spend so much. And Congress has also said through the debt limit that you can't borrow to pay for what you've spent. So Congress has insisted you do contradictory things. When that happens, it's your job as the head of the executive branch to say, I can't spend what you told me to spend, tax what you told me to tax, and not run a debt. I've got to violate one of those three rules. So here's what you do. You violate the debt ceiling. The debt ceiling was set back in 2008 when George Bush was president, and it was prior in time. The spending and the taxing is after. You say, you know what? I think the debt ceiling is simply unconstitutional. And my source for that, by the way, is Section 4 of the 14th Amendment, which says the validity of the public debt can't be questioned. By saying that, suddenly you win negotiating room with the Republicans.
Somehow or other,
I have another idea to fight the debt ceiling.
The audience
But before I get to that,
Mark,
we have someone in our audience who
yes.
wants to speak out. You want to
yes.
give us your first name?
Jump in.
Or not. You don't have to.
Okay. Hal?
Hi, y'all.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Get a little closer to the mic. Closer to the mic there so we can hear you.
We want to hear what you're saying.
There you go.
There we go.
Okay. Welcome.
Okay. What do you think about starting a new political party? This is a political caucus, and the political party would be dedicated to addressing the very things that you're talking about, like this addiction that you're talking about. Are we there yet?
Yes.
You're good. We're here, loud and clear.
Form a new political party to address
what
this addiction.
That we are addicted to? Because it's not just President Obama. He's addicted to something, but we need to determine what these people are addicted to, and are we all addicted to it?
Excellent.
And
excellent.
Then we need to, I think, I'd like to hear you talk about the idea of forming a new political party to address these kinds of issues. The one of the reasons I'm here is because I listen to you guys every week, and you keep, in my opinion, you keep moving in the right direction. And we just need to proceed. You know, we need to go farther. We need to translate this into action. And just by being here talking like this, we are acting.
Well, one way we could translate into action, we'll get to a political party in a second. One way you translate to action is, it's a new Facebook page I just started. People listening at home, if you go to Facebook and you look under causes, it's called Obama Intervention. And I hope people will join that and help spread the message. Whether we need a political party, I suspect we're going to have some disagreement up here. So we'll get right to it. My view is, a political party would be the wrong way to go, because I think when you have a political party, it splinters the Democrats, and then, as Ralph Nader showed in 2000, we tend to lose votes. I don't think it's because Obama doesn't care. I actually believe that the Senator Obama that gave those wonderful speeches in 2008 is the same guy that's occupying the White House. I think he does care, but what I think don't think he realizes is that we are behind him to push him to do what he really wants to do. See, to me, that's why it's an intervention. I don't think he's turned against us so much as he's turned against himself. And I think we can help bring him home to his own ideas. But, Terry, I know you disagree. Go ahead.
There's two different issues you've raised, and they're excellent issues. The first issue, you know, is a new political party. There's a great many reasons why the corporate structure is not going to allow that to happen. It's simply not going to allow it to happen. But we can discuss that more. The other question is there something that we as Americans are addicted to? And that's a big question. I think we've got an intervention that needs to be a little bit bigger than just the president. Because one of the things that Americans are addicted to is misinformation and simple answers.
And easy solutions.
And
right.
easy solutions.
Ideas
and
that aren't realistic. That's what we're addicted to.
Yeah, and we're also addicted to this whole idea that we can get whatever we want. I mean, it's an addiction that began generations ago. It has escalated to the point.
Well, Ronald Reagan started it, right?
No,
low taxes, high spending, and massive debt.
Well, another thing, that's
a manifestation.
You know another thing we're addicted to, Terry?
Yeah.
The idea that someone else is going to fix it for
us,
whether it's Barack Obama,
exactly.
That I can sit here, as I've said many times before, that I can elect Barack Obama, I can sit back in my easy chair and say, where's that change I ordered,
buddy?
You
know that comic on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
I forgot his name, but he goes on Weekend
Seth
Update.
Meyer?
No, the black guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I forget his name. But he goes on, he's Mr. Fix-It Man.
He
describes all the problems, and he says, go fix it! Fix
right.
it. Well,
so,
what's your answer? Just fix it.
I think
he represents the American people.
Right, the American people get here's. But look what happens every 2 years. Okay, 2008, the Republicans are wiped out. In come the Democrats. Well, it's 2010. I wiped the Democrats in. It's time for the Republicans. Every 2 years, we're ping pong, and why? Because they're going to fix it. Oh, wait a minute. It's been 18 months. Those guys didn't fix it. Let's put the other guys. Oh, they didn't fix. Let's put. And we go back and forth. And we never recognize it. And that is we're doing nothing. We're sitting on our butts waiting for people to fix it who are in the pockets of the powerful corporations and are only in office because they can get money from the powerful corporations and won't listen to us unless we force them to, and we do
nothing. Thank you for your comment. Just the last thing, I think you can work within the Democratic Party to move it to the left. As Bernie Sanders, socialist in the Senate, said, the Republican Party is 100% corrupt. The Democratic Party is only 50% corrupt. At least it gives us a basis to work with.
Underestimated.
Now we're going to hear some reality here.
Yeah.
A dose of reality.
Bill, talk to us, Bill.
Go ahead.
Okay. I think.
Turn up the microphone.
Close to the mic. Close to the mic.
First of all, I think we underestimate what's right. My name's Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay. I think we underestimate it is. A lot of it is the people the president is surrounded by, all the corporate types, that has bled over from the Republican Party. But I would like to suggest if somehow, some way, we can start making some kind of noise to get him to do a Harry Truman. That, as I see it,
join the cause, Obama intervention.
Is the only hope I see for him saving himself. I mean, unfortunately, we really need him to get reelected this time.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean,
it's true.
You know,
we do.
The Democrats have to defend twice as many seats in the Senate as the Republicans do.
It's true.
And it's unlikely that the Democrats are going to pick up 25 seats in the House to take it back. So somehow, some way,
if we have a Republican president, we are doomed.
We have got to get some kind of groundswell going. And I can't believe that most people in this country, if they hear it now, this is one thing that I think that is a fault of the Democrats and the left and whoever, liberals, however you want to put it. We seem to shy away from being simple about our message and repeating it ad nauseum. And we need to get in the habit, number one, of saying, Mr. President, the Republicans have got tell the people the Republicans' bedrock value is protecting the tax cuts for the rich.
That's right.
And we need to make sure we say this to him and make sure he starts saying it to the people until we're all sick of hearing it, and then we need to say it some more.
Bill, I'll tell you, just to go on to what you're saying, the President of the United States, to my mind, and you gentlemen correct me if I'm wrong, has given one address from the Oval Office in all the years he's been president. It was about sending troops to Afghanistan. He has not sat down at the desk at the Oval Office the way Franklin Delano Roosevelt did, the way Harry Truman did, give him hell, Harry, the way
Ronald Reagan did,
the way Bill Clinton did, and said what you're saying, Bill, that the Republicans, they just said it today. They said, we are not going to negotiate if you raise taxes on billionaires one penny. We are not going to negotiate if you make oil and gas companies pay a penny more in taxes. He needs to tell that frankly to the American people, and then the battle.
Not only that, he
joined.
Needs to say, wait a minute. Last time I checked, I was the president. You know, right afterwards, you remember when the Republicans got mad when he said, well, we won. Well, you know what?
Elections have consequences.
Yeah, sometimes in politics, you got to say, well, I understand that you won't negotiate under certain circumstances. Last time I checked, I'm the one in the Oval Office, and you're not going to set the rules for me. And that's the problem we have.
And the other thing, too, is the other party, our system is too stable for that, as far as third parties go.
It's too what?
Too stable.
Our system is too stable. If we had a parliamentary system, wouldn't be a problem.
That's true, but we don't have there's nothing we can do about it in the short run.
The reality is, it's not a realistic option for change in the foreseeable future. It's not. I mean,
you know what bothers
people
me
try
with all
it,
this?
But it's,
you know, this really begins to bother me, guys, because we're all over the map, and we're all over the map because we're not facing basic core issues, and because Obama is not facing basic core issues, and because the American public is not facing basic issues. And some politician somewhere, unless we are doomed, and we may be, has to get the guts and the courage to speak the honest truth, going all the way back, if you like, and it's a good place to start, with Dwight Eisenhower, and say, look, the military-industrial complex has taken over the country. Do you understand that?
Wall Street has half now. They only got half. Wall Street has other.
You know, one other thing you could say that is so obvious and doesn't take much explanation is we have moved from market capitalism to managed capitalism. And people need to understand what managed capitalism is, which is nothing more than moving money, which screws everybody except the people at the top.
It's called gambling.
Somebody has got to get to the core problems in this country and address those with guts before anything is ever going to change.
I think you just did it, Terry.
Thank you.
All right.
One more question from our audience. Go ahead. Speak up.
Yeah. I think that's exactly the right idea. We need to address the core problems. We're not addressing the core problems.
No.
And another point I would like to make is that I think that Barack Obama is being forced into the position that you're decrying. He's being forced by the Republicans and maybe the Democrats too. So it's not like he, you know, you have made this point yourselves that he's not able to control the situation.
If there's a
new party, now the Tea Party is a new party.
No, it's not.
No.
Well,
it's a faux grassroots part of the Republican Party.
Yeah, but
it's funded by the same Karl Roves and other people that fund the Republican Party. Now, they don't always – they claim to distance themselves from Republicans. It's a very clever move to try to distance themselves from all the massive spending of the Bush administration. But really, if you noted, every single Tea Party candidate ran for the Republican Party. That doesn't mean that those ideas can't be co-opted.
Do the progressives have a movement? No. His point is good. They have a movement. We don't.
Maybe we should do the same thing.
But I agree.
Yes.
So sign up for Obama intervention, if you will, on Facebook, and let's show people that we support the president in what he wants to do. You've said, for example, he was forced to do what he has to do. I actually don't think it's that strong. And again, I give the example when the Democrats controlled Congress and Bush was president, and yet Bush was still setting the agenda. I'll give you another example for the debt ceiling. I thought a lot about the debt ceiling because the debt ceiling is a game of chicken What it is the Republicans are saying, we're going to send the economy into absolute collapse. We're going to do something that's never been done before in American history. Not during the Revolution, not during the Civil War. We've always paid our debts. We're going to make sure that America defaults, doesn't pay its debts, will be an economic Armageddon, the rest of the world won't put their money into dollars, and we will suffer for centuries. In other words, they've declared basically a nuclear war on the economy.
You know, this,
and President Obama
where is your president?
Here's how I think he should respond. I'd like to hear.
Wouldn't he say plan is a war on the American
people? He needs
people.
To say
it's
that
not a war on the economy.
But another thing he could do,
why can't he say it? That's the real question.
He needs to say it, Terry. But I also think there are more subtle ways to attack. All right, he right now has got to we're out of money according to the false strictures the Republicans have placed on him. So here's what I would do if I were President of the United States. I'd say, all right, we're out of money. You know what? We can't have inspectors inspect your oil company drilling. Sorry, no oil company drilling until the debt ceiling is raised. Oh, I'm sorry, we can't issue hunting and fishing licenses. I'm sorry, red state voters, no hunting and fishing licenses. I want to do it, but I'll have to wait till the debt ceiling is raised. People that get Social Security checks that make more than $500,000, you know what? We'd like to give you Social Security checks, but we're out of money. Corporate tax refunds, I'm sorry. We want to give it to you. We have a right to have it, but we're out of money. If he would start cutting off the government funds, things like Michelle Bachmann, who gets $250,000 in agricultural subsidies, cut off Bachmann's agricultural subsidy. If you cut off the government largesse, the government welfare to corporations and red state voters, and do it now. Don't wait till August 2nd. Enough of them will complain. They'll complain to the Republican legislators, and guess what? He will have a deal pretty darn quick.
Here's the sad part of it. The truth is,
listen up. Are you listening, Mr. President?
All parties involved know this. The reality is, the Republicans are not going to let it happen. The debt ceiling.
The president can do all that by himself.
But no, here's what I'm saying. The debt ceiling will be raised.
Of course.
Behind closed doors, they've been promising the Wall Street people, reassuring the people on Wall Street, look, we're not really going to do this. We're not that crazy.
This is all bluster.
Their money. Look, the Wall Street people are sitting there saying, let me tell you something. We're all with you, but you're getting ready to kill our cash cow.
That's right.
And they're saying, look, we're not going to kill the cash
cow.
We're
just trying to trick Obama. He's going to fall for it.
He's going to buy it. We'll get everything we want. We're not going to do it. When the reality is what the president should say, could very well say is, let me explain something to you.
Make my day.
Here's what I'm going to do. I am not negotiating for the debt. I'm not just not going to do it.
That's
period.
Right.
Here's what I'm going to do.
You raise it or I'm going to say it's unconstitutional.
Go to the American people and say, let me explain to you what's going to happen. I am going to be in my office with a pen waiting to raise the debt ceiling. I'm waiting to do this. I'm not negotiating with the Republicans. I'm not doing anything else. I'm waiting to do this.
That's right.
If they don't do this, your economy collapses. You need to put pressure on them. He needs to call the Wall Street leaders and say, understand this. This is no joke. I am not negotiating. You need to talk to your Republican representatives and get them in here, because if they don't, your poor little economy is going down.
And if we stop the corporate welfare right now, those voters would go to their Republican representatives.
We've forgotten entirely our whole intervention process here. We still haven't faced the single question, which somehow that we have to face. Is why isn't he doing any of these things?
That's a powerful, you're right.
Either he has sold out, or he's incapable, or somehow he doesn't understand.
Or he's lost his way and can be found back home.
Yeah, that sounds really nice. But the real point is, everybody has solutions. You have solutions. I have solutions. Mark has solutions. None of these are being heard. None of these are being done. What are we, the public, going to do about it? We still have to demand.
Now you're talking. What are we going to do about it?
What we're going to do about it, which I keep on thinking more than an intervention, unless intervention leads to it, is we've got to take to the streets.
Well, that's why we can take to the digital streets.
Tell me one reason that there isn't a mob in this capital of poor people, unemployed people, underemployed
people. Middle-class people.
Uninsured.
And
any human beings that aren't corporations.
The Republican / right wing policies have been successful in one motive that is too little remarked upon, which is when you drive the if you drive the populace to a point where everyone is concerned with just scraping by and making a living.
That's true. That's what
they're going to be a lot more Now, if you get past that point to utter desperations, maybe you'll get mobbed.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
The tipping point, yeah.
So many people are so hard up against it that they haven't done it. If we go back to the time when the most sweeping domestic change was made in the United States, think about the conditions.
Depression.
The last time, which was the civil rights movement. Think about the
and
conditions.
The poor people's campaign.
Wages, industrial, the United States economy was huge. Industrial wages were very high. Union participation was high. The tax rates on the wealthy were like 90% before John Kennedy cut them.
That's right.
And what happened was enough of the white population was comfortable enough not to feel threatened by opening up the society to black people who had been here to before then surplus labor.
We got to wrap this up.
Go ahead.
Thank you for your point. Listen, here's what you can do. Terry's always in favor of taking the streets. I am in favor. If anyone we can start this, we are happy to do that. One thing, though, one of the ways that they succeeded in Tunisia and Egypt, that they're trying to succeed in Syria and Yemen, they were afraid to take to the streets. Many did take to the streets. Many are being killed right now in Syria, frankly, who've taken to the streets. But many of them did it digitally. They just went on their computer, and they expressed their protest that way. And that's why I've set up a cause on Facebook that I'm going to urge everyone to join, the Obama Intervention. It's just new. I'm new with the tweeting stuff. Let's get hundreds of thousands of people to sign on.
The real fact is you've got to get the power structure afraid.
Well, you do
and
that
with
takes, numbers.
That takes physical
numbers.
People in the streets.
Yep.
Let me give you one statistic.
Numbers of people
one
signing up would do it.
That should lead every one of you to the streets immediately. 25% of American children in schools, school-age children, 25% are homeless.
They're living in poverty and homeless.
25%. Aren't we in the streets?
Well, that's the point. When you say, Terry, always go out in the streets, you don't give people a specific action to do, then it's like, well, yeah, I take to the streets.
Oh, come on. What specific action was there in the poor people's march? We're not going to tolerate
people schedule
that's
marches.
The action.
Well,
we
got to have some people to think, and we got to thank, and we got to remind people what station they're listening. All the goodies here. We're running out of time.
So just to end this intervention, if you'll join the cause, Obama Intervention, if we get enough of you, we can start scheduling marches in the streets. This is WPFW 9.3 FM. This is the Raucous Caucus. I want to thank our producer, Drew Franklin, our engineer in studio, Daniel Musisi, in studio, David Kelly, for helping us out. And Garland, where can they find you?
They can Facebook me, Garland Nixon.
And Terry, where can they find you?
Marching on the Capitol damn soon. Join me.
Hey, I'm
with
you, Terry.
Are you going right now?
I'm going soon.
Let's bring bag it, buddy. We're going to be there for a while.
I am on Facebook as well. This show will be broadcast at marklevine.tv if you missed any part of it.
Or WPFW.org.
And I'm serious about joining the cause. I set it up for a reason. I'm new to the Twitter stuff. I'm Mark Levine TV on Twitter. I'm very new at this. I'm trying to use the social media. Help me out. Help us out. Help the cause out by joining the cause, expressing your interest, giving us ideas, and we will be back next week in studio.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock every Tuesday. It's the Raucous Caucus. And Mr. President, thank you for sitting here and listening to us tonight. Go out and do justice.
Washington. Thank you. Mm-hmm.